Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, and today I got a true legend in the building, somebody I spent a large percentage of my life listening to be totally honest.
That's what's up, man. I didn't know that. I appreciate that.
No, facts. I loved the Rockefeller era, obviously, state property, all that shit, but then I continued to be a fan all through the Jake 1 era, like 2008, 2009. I was definitely riding BMX bikes all over New York.
That's what's up.
Listening to all that shit, just so many crazy beats during that era.
Yeah, we just finished the stimulus package too. We can really drop it this year.
Right. So the stimulus package one, that was the one that you released track by track, like week by week, or was that a separate release?
What I did this thing called Month of Madness where I dropped a record every day for 31 days. And on the 31st day, I dropped two records.
Right.
You know, I always try to push the envelope and do a little more than everybody else.
Yeah, I feel like you're the first person to do that back during like the blog era.
Yeah, shout out. Actually, my brother Young Chris, he inspired me to do it. He was like dropping a record a week or something. So I was like, I'm going to do a record every day.
Right, because you owned the blogs during that time period because you'd be putting out a new record every day. So it was just kind of like nonstop promotion from all these websites I used to check all the time.
Yeah, when The Rock broke up, you know, at first it really affected me, but then I told myself the hard work is already done. I'm already famous. So I went back to what got me there in the first place, and that's hard work. I just was like dropping mixtapes, independent projects. I dropped Month of Madness. I dropped Stimulus Package with Jake One. Mm-hmm. I dropped Broken Ankles with Girl Talk, you know, and a lot of them joints did a lot for me. Like when I dropped the Stimulus Package with Jake, we went on tour overseas. That's the first time I toured overseas.
Right.
When I dropped I dropped the thing with Girl Talk. And I did every festival that year. We did like Coachella, I did Made in America, Boston Callings, all the festivals.
And probably a huge percentage of the people out there don't know what Girl Talk was, but it was just one dude, right?
Yeah, it's one dude.
And it was like very sample oriented, like dance hipster type music at that time. I knew I don't know if I ever saw him, but I knew a ton of girls that would go see him all the time, and people loved it during that era. And I think you were like the first and possibly only rapper to embrace him.
Yeah, he been doing a lot of stuff lately too, like with like Big Crit. I think he did some stuff with Wiz Khalifa.
Really?
So he grinding. He's still doing his thing.
That's dope. Yeah, because I mean, like, during the Rockefeller era, it was like people want to put you in a certain box where you got to be Jiggy, you got to be like the super fresh sort of like mainstream, like descending from Jay-Z's lineage type of artist. But then you proceeded to, like, after the rock shit fell apart, you proceeded to basically like find a ton of different routes towards getting a bag and putting your music in people's faces.
Yeah, that's because I really had a passion for the music. You know, I really, this is what I wanted to do when I was little. You know, when they ask you what you want to be when you grew up, I wanted to be a rap star and an airline pilot.
Mm.
And now I'm a rap star. I fly just as much as an airline pilot.
So, right. Know. That's facts. Okay. So, yeah, like kind of going back to the beginning, though, like was the Rockefeller thing ever a weird fit for you, or did it just 100% make sense because you had already decided that you were going to make it as a rapper?
It really made sense for me because, you know, I was coming straight from the block. And, you know, Jay from the streets, he was in the streets heavy, Beans, Bleak, everybody. So I felt like it was a perfect fit. But as far as music, I just was like a real rapper. Like, you know, like I don't even think Beans wanted to be a rapper. You know, he just started doing it. I really wanted to be a rapper.
Didn't Jay sign him before he had actually rapped, like just based off of his charisma?
He signed, like, he just was doing stuff like in the hood. Like, he wasn't like making songs and like, you know, pursuing a rap career. He just was hot, you know, and Jay signed him.
And was he like mega deep in the streets at that point? Was was his thing?
Yeah, he was heavy in the streets. Yeah.
And so what was your relationship to Beanie before you got signed?
I met Beans at a rap battle in Philly. It was this place called Dances where like people would go. Like it was a legendary battle with Tommy Hill from Ram Squad, rest in peace, he passed away, and Cam. And like Cam roasted him down there. And it was like a place in Philly where everybody would go, like all the young people, to party. And sometimes you have rap battles there. So Beans was like battling a couple people on stage. And I was in a crowd. I told him to pull me up. He pulled me up. And I started battling the people with him. And since then, we built a rapport.
Mm. And so when the state property idea started coming down, like, did that exist before Rockefeller wanted to sign a group out of Philly?
No, we put state property together.
Right.
You know, like, Chris and Eve from Nice Town, Owen Sparks from West Philly, and Petey Crack from my neighborhood. So, you know, they wanted to sign everybody, and then they put us together and made us a group.
Because now the story has kind of come out more basically like through Gilly and stuff of basically how at one point Rockefeller wanted to sign major figures.
Yeah.
And then Gilly basically was kind of like offended by the deal, didn't feel like it was a good deal. So he takes a step back, mm-hmm. and then basically Rockefeller kind of like has this deal regardless, and they decide to put together the whole state property thing.
It was basically like that. It was basically like that.
And was there ever conversations where they basically told you guys that you weren't allowed to be cool with major figures at all, or that you were even supposed to diss them and kind of go at them?
Like Jay and them real niggas, they would never say nothing like that. Like, you know, it was just like tension from being from the same city, and, you know, people knew they had that opportunity at first. Mm. You know, everybody knew that.
Because now there's a lot of stories coming out, like, about Jay refusing to play at certain concerts if major figures were going to be on the bill, and different stuff that in terms of that rivalry that I think a lot of us weren't really, like, aware of, especially because state property was so big. I didn't even know who Major Figures was during this era. Yeah, you know, I know now.
Major Figures was big in Philly. Like, right. They were super big in Philly. And as far as that, I never heard none of that. Like, I don't know nothing about that. And me knowing Jay, I don't think he would do nothing that petty.
Right. You know? I don't know, though. I feel like Jay's got a petty bone in him, right?
I don't know. That's, you know, I don't think nobody gonna stop somebody from eating.
Mm, definitely. Okay, but so then the group kind of comes together. And would you say that there was, like, a lot of real chemistry within the group? Or was it kind of like a group that just came together because everybody was nice at rapping? Because I feel like that's kind of like a shaky foundation to build a group on. Like, was there tension early on?
No, it was definitely a lot of chemistry. You know, we are from the same city. And at the time, State Property, like, brought the city together. Like, once we came together and made a group, even in the jails, like, you know, before North Philly and South Philly ain't fuck with each other, but, like, State Property really united the city.
Mm. Like, yeah, and it's crazy because even when I talk to younger rappers from Philly and stuff, when I'm talking to, like, 19, 20-year-old dudes, they still know that there was this very important era, even if they maybe weren't really alive to be appreciated in it. And I think that's part of the value of having a group, is that the group is able to kind of represent something bigger to the audience rather than just an individual.
Yeah, most definitely. It is very important.
Right.
And like I said, everybody, we represented the whole city. And when we came together, you know, it was just love. You know, it just clicked. Then we had the movies to go with it and the clothing line. It just made sense, you know.
Right, definitely. And do you think that things would have kept going strong for the group as a whole if the Rockefeller breakup never happened?
I definitely think so. We still, like, you know, last year was my 20-year anniversary. So February 25th, we had a huge concert in Philadelphia, sold it out. And it was the first time the whole State Property performed together in years. And,
really?
You know, it was dope. Then we wound up doing a Roots picnic that year.
Mm.
And March 8th, next Friday, is Bean's 25-year anniversary. So we all going to be there performing with him, too. So,
oh, that's fire.
You know, we're trying to make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I listened to the whole first project again today while I was in the gym. And it's definitely a classic. It's definitely, like, stood the test of time. And I noticed that you post about it on Instagram, and it feels like you have, like, a real soft spot for it. Like, it's indicative of a very specific era during your career.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, you know, it was a very pivotal moment for me in life in general. Like, you know, I went straight from the block to that. Like, you know, you know how now people come home from jail and they got, like, re-entry programs, and it's, like, things that they want to do, maybe, like, being a carpenter or, like, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I came home from jail, Rockefeller and State Property was my reentry program.
Right.
You know, because I literally went straight from house arrest to New York and started recording with Jay and Beans and everything.
Right. How long were you locked up that time?
6 months.
6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that for?
Possession with intent to deliver.
Okay. And so you get out of that, and the situation's already kind of, like, lined up and waiting for you. Like, Beanie had been communicating, like, how dope you were,
like,
to them.
I had to go to, like, a halfway house program type thing after I got out of jail, and I had to stay there for 90 days. And I'll be talking to Beans, and he'll be like, yeah, I'm in L.A. When you get off house arrest, you're going to be right with me. And then he's like, yeah, I'm in Miami. It's lit down here. As soon as you get done with all that shit, you're going to be right with me. Then I was right with him after that.
So. Right. And so going from jail to like being in the studio with Jay and being around all this rich shit, like what was that like for you emotionally?
I mean, it was like, finally, like I'm getting my shot. Like, you know, this is what I wanted to do my whole life, you know? So it was a blessing, you know, and I was just trying to take full advantage of it.
And during those sessions, were you working on State Property stuff, or is that like the era that 1-900 Hustler and all this stuff came out of?
We was doing everything. Like, we would be in there on everybody's budget. Like, just me and Beans probably do like 3-4 songs a night. State Property, we was cutting every day. Like, at that time, like, it could be Dipset in one room, Bleak and I'm in another room, Jay in one room. Like, Baseline, it was lit, and the level of MCs was through the roof, so it felt like the competition. You had to be on your P's and Q's when you came in there.
Right.
Like, if you laid some bullshit and they played it in there, you would know.
Right. Definitely. But were you guys writing at the time, or like, because obviously now rappers are way more inclined to just punch in the booth, which is basically like something that Jay kind of like brought to the table and like kind of influenced so many people. But were you guys writing at that time? Because when it's that super high speed, fast paced environment, it's like very difficult to sit down and write.
Yeah, nothing y'all ever heard from me was written down.
Really? It's still like that? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. From the be since 1-900 Hustler before, nothing y'all ever heard me spit was written down.
And was that influenced by Jay, or that was just how you were living?
I mean, I was doing it before that, but definitely was, you know, once I seen Jay do it, I'm like, all right, this is definitely where I'm at. I'm doing the right thing.
Wow, that's dope. Okay, so 1-900 Hustler.
I started doing it because my handwriting was so sloppy. Like, I was like, I'm left-handed and my handwriting sloppy, so I would write raps and then can't even read the shit half the time, so I had to memorize it.
Really? The phone kind of changes that a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah. Another thing I do is voice notes. Like, I got hits in my voice notes. Like,
really?
Just like, I leave here and be riding in the car and then come up with something, I'll put it in my voice notes.
And then when it comes time to record, you'll just kind of listen to it and use that to influence it?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I might drop a voice note project one day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But so once you start, so 1-900 Hustler in particular, like that kind of, anyone who didn't know you, that was a massive introduction. Mm-hmm. Like, was there a real conversation about what you were going to do with that song in terms of the theme and everything, or how did that come together?
I mean, they already had the theme and everything together, and I was in the studio, and I think originally Beans was supposed to do the verse, but he was like, let Free do it. So I'm like, damn, this is my shot. So I got the verse together, and I laid the verse. I remember right before I laid the verse, Jay had brought the chicken to play the violin before the before the my verse. And he was like, I'm going to set you up right. This your introduction to the world. So that's why he put the music right before. So it was like an introduction. And then I come in, first things first, watch what you say out your mouth. You know, and after 1-900 Hustler, the rest is history.
Right.
Like, I remember I did my first show in Queens, and it was still like around the middle of the beef. And I had 1-900 Hustler, and I had like a couple freestyles. They paid me $1,500. We strapped up, we went up to that joint, we did the show, and I ain't stopped doing shows since.
Really?
Mm-mm.
That must have been crazy, because at that time, like, being put on a project like that and having an introduction like that, and especially just having such a unique vocal tone, you just stood out so much. It was like anybody who was a Jay-Z fan instantaneously knew all about Freeway, right?
Yeah. It was definitely a blessing that, you know, proceeds to this day.
Right. Definitely. I remember there being like a conversation around that time of like, Freeway, he sounded cool doing the Cassidy battle and shit like that, but people aren't going to want to listen to him for a whole project.
Yeah, that it was talks like that at the label. Like, people were saying that exactly what you said. They was like, we don't know if, you know, people would listen to a whole album of his voice. It might get annoying, but, you know, it's one of the things people love me for.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember hearing that argument. I forget if it was in the Source or something. Like, it might have been a letter somebody wrote in, or it might have been something that is mentioned in an article. And I remember at that time, I was super excited for your first project. So I remember being kind of like offended of like, oh, wow, like people are at least weighing the possibility that this dude's flow might not translate into an entire album. But did you go into making that album with that as a little bit of a consideration of like, people are expecting me to not be able to handle this opportunity?
Mm-mm. Like, I was super hyped. Like, you know, they say you wait your whole life to make your first album, you know? So I was just putting my all into it. I was in the studio every day. Like, you know, I would fucking go to New York with change your drawers and the toothbrush and just be in baseline days in a row, you know.
Definitely. And so to me, like, one of the greatest rap songs of all time is Even Though What We Do Is Wrong. Like, that's, it's just always stood with me. And if I were to kind of break down why I think that's the case, it's kind of like you're the perfect person to have been so pivotal to that song, because I feel like throughout your rap career, lyrically, you've always kind of acknowledged that, whether it was rapping about things that are maybe not necessarily in line with your faith or talking about selling drugs, you've always, like, talked about what you were doing, but then also we're talking about the consequences of it and how you were somewhat conflicted about doing it. And that song is kind of like the perfect representation of that, of being a rapper or a drug dealer or whatever who's doing their thing, but then you also know that this isn't necessarily the right way to be living.
Most definitely. You know, because that's my reality, and not only my reality, but a bunch of people from Philly, you know, at the time, like, you know, my whole neighborhood, you know, a lot of us was in the streets living that life, but we know we shouldn't be doing it. You know, we Muslim, we know it's a certain way that we supposed to be living, and, you know, it's a consequence for that.
And so when did you get serious about Islam?
It's crazy, because I probably took my Shahada when I was like 13.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been serious about Islam the whole time. You know, there was a point where I didn't even smoke, and I would, like, go on a block, and they'd be smoking. And I'm like, what y'all doing? Why, y'all know we got to go to Juma Friday? And, like, you know, I was that bull. Mm. Like, you know, but, you know, as time progressed and me being in the streets, I started doing everything that everybody else was doing. I started selling drugs, started smoking weed, started going to Juma on Friday. You know, I fell into the trap that the hood traps you in, you know. So as I got older, you know, even, you know, once I gained fame, I still, you know, offer my salats and try my best to take Islam serious. But, you know, where I'm at in life right now, Islam is very serious. You know, I had a lot of, you know, tragedies in my life. I was on dialysis from September 15th, 2015 to February 5th, 2019, where I received my gift of life. I got my new kidney. Then 2020, my son passed away. My daughter was diagnosed with cancer in September of 2020. My son died October 2020. My daughter died October 2021 from that cancer. Then my dad died, you know, November 2022.
So you're just getting hammered left and right with some of the worst things you could possibly deal with, like, in life.
One of those things that completely crush a person, you know. But my faith in Islam is, like, the main thing that got me through. You know, I know God's not going to put nothing on me that I can't handle. And that's how I've been carrying it, you know. But this is why I take my religion very serious now, because, you know, after you have some deaths in your family and tragedy that's real close to you, you know, it really affects you.
No, definitely. And, I mean, when I was reading about all the stuff that you've been through for the past few years, it was brutal, you know, like, just to imagine somebody who's got such a good heart having to go through so many of these things.
Even, like, when I'm hearing you talk about your daughter, you know, that put a smile on my face, man, because my daughter was my best friend. Like, you know, when my son passed away, my daughter was my support system, like, you know, even through battling cancer, you know. So cherish the moments with your daughter, man.
And how do you, I appreciate that, how do you make sense of having to deal with such tragedies? Like, do you look at it as a series of obstacles that God puts in front of you that are to test you? Or is this just pure luck that some people have to deal with, losing a child young?
There's no such thing as luck. Like, you know, the pen has been lifted and the ink is dried. Everything that happens is what God planned for us to happen. You know, one thing that gives me solace in losing my children, our prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he lost six of his children, you know. And when I think about losing my children, I think of him and, you know, the way that he had to deal with losing his children and how he carried it, you know, with grace. And that really helps me get through, you know. And like I told you before, I know God's not going to put nothing on me that I can't handle. And these things, when we go through these things and we go through these tragedies, they're designed to bring us closer to God, you know, and that's what they do for me.
Right. And you being closer to God, does that usually entail, like, observing more of the restrictions or, like, the things that are in place? Like, do you feel like those, would you be a more serious religious person if you did, you know, leave smoking alone, or if you...
Yeah, most definitely.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you consider all of those to basically be like steps towards making yourself a more pure person and getting closer to your Lord?
Most definitely. You know, the more that you do, the higher your faith is, the higher your iman is, the better person you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing that makes me different from you or me better than you is our faith in God. You know, money, none of that stuff don't matter. You know, our faith in God and how close we are to God is what makes us better people.
So if you were dead broke, but you felt like your relationship with God was strong, then that would be satisfactory to you in terms of living your life? Or
I mean, definitely, you got to trust in the law, but you got to tie your camel up at the same time. Like, I don't mean sit around, just have faith in God and just sit around and expect miracles to happen and expect things to fall in your lap. You got to work towards taking care of yourself, but the best of us are the ones that has a close connection with God and has faith in God.
Interesting. Okay. So there's always this like stereotype of like all the dudes or all the rappers in Philly have big ass beards and they're Muslim. Like, was that just a big movement in the community when you were young? Because you didn't grow up with the faith, right?
Yeah, I took shahada when I was like 12 or 13.
And was just like a lot of like groups in the community that were kind of spreading the word and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, in Philadelphia, it's a large Islamic community. I had a homie that I grew up with. His name was Dante, and he was Muslim. And, you know, Islam always interested me.
Mm.
Like, when I grew up, my mom was Christian. My dad was in this thing called the Nation of Akibbalan,
right,
which was like an African-based religion. And they, like, was doing all this crazy stuff. They had, like, a guy in there, and they said he was a prophet. And we know there's no more prophets after the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So I grew up in a household with conflicting religions, so I always thought about religion. And when I started studying religion, Islam just made sense to me. Like, you know, everything made sense. You know, it was like nothing, no question that couldn't get answered for me, you know. And as I started studying, I realized that this is the religion for me and for all of us.
Definitely. Do you consider it an important part of your faith to like spread that to more people in terms of like, you know, just youths that you know? Or
yeah, most definitely. Like a Muslim's job is to remind you of God, you know. So a lot of instances and a lot of occasions I would bump into people and they would tell me, I make them think of God, or I remind them of God, or instance that we had together brought them closer to God. So when I have situations like that, it makes me feel like I'm doing my job as a Muslim.
Because I saw Vlad point out to you that, you know, a lot of Muslims consider music itself to be kind of haram.
Yeah, most definitely.
And is that like a battle within you in terms of like, this is, you love God, but you also love hip hop, and this is kind of like what you've built your whole career off of. Is it a battle inside of you, or do you feel like you would be a little bit closer to where you want to be at if you did eventually end up leaving the music alone, or do you just love
definitely.
It too much?
You know, I want to get to a point where I'm not doing music anymore. Like, you know, and, you know, God willing, God give me the time to do that, but I shouldn't be doing music. Like, you know, it's a difference of opinion between a lot of Islamic groups. But I believe wholeheartedly that I really shouldn't be doing it, you know, because I could be doing better things with my time. As far as me, I could be studying and, you know, doing things to bring me closer to God while I'm spending time making music. And for the listener, they could be doing things to bring them closer to God instead of listening to my music, you know. So
is hip hop the appropriate vehicle by which to convert people or teach them about the faith? Because like you do speak about your faith in music, but you also, it's not exactly like the overwhelming topic that you talk about.
No, I'm not going to sit here and say hip-hop is the vehicle to convert people to Islam by any means. You know, I'm just living my life and I'm just telling my story. You know, when things that I go through, things that I talk about, I reflect real life. I reflect things that I actually been through, and me being Muslim, it comes out in my music.
I mean, I feel like as rap fans, we all know what it's like to listen to some rap music that is a little bit too heavy-handed in terms of trying to moralize or, like, you know, put a message into you. Like, I remember I used to go to this boxing gym, and I, you know, after listening to Christian rap for a couple months in a row, I was just kind of over it. I was just like,
yeah, I feel you.
Waking up at 7 a.m. and having to listen to dudes rap about Jesus. It's just not for me as a non-believer. It's just not really doing it for me. And mm-hmm. I feel like you could easily put out an album tomorrow that's like Freeway teaches you how to be a good Muslim for 45 minutes. And yeah. But is that, I mean, you could also probably imagine that would alienate a bunch of your fans, right?
Yeah, and then it wouldn't be reality. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying my best, you know, but I'm still, you know, I'm still in music. Like, it's still things that I do that I shouldn't be doing, you know? So I'm just giving people my reality.
Mm. I feel like there's been a few high profile conversions, namely Andrew Tate, who it seemed like, I don't know how much you follow that, but like kind of at the height of his fame and his controversies and whatnot, he decided to convert. Like, how does that come across to you as somebody who's been doing this for a long time to see somebody sort of abruptly become part of the faith? And in a lot of people's opinion, maybe kind of using it to possibly like circumvent some controversy.
I mean, being Muslim, I think it's beautiful when anybody takes Shahada, you know, because we are like, I can't make nobody Muslim. You can't make nobody Muslim. Only God makes Muslims, you know. So anytime someone takes Shahada, I think it's a beautiful thing. In the state of the world and the things that's going on, people are coming closer to Islam. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, they launched the James Webb Telescope at the, what was it, the beginning of 2023? And then they're showing all these images and all these things in space that people never seen before. And, like, they, at one point, they didn't think that the universe multiplied every second. They thought that it just was what it was. But in Islam and in the Quran, they tell us that the universe multiplies every second. So a lot of scientists seen this information, and a bunch of scientists took Shahada after that.
Really?
You know, and in Islam, you know, they say seek throughout the world and you're going to find things, and everything that you find is going to bring you back to God and show you that God exists. So that's what's going on a lot now, you know. So I think it's a beautiful thing.
So you don't see religion and science as being at odds?
No. I mean, when you, it's, we're seeing examples of it right now coming together, you know, because a lot of things that they talk about in the Quran, scientists are just finding out and they're realizing, you know, that this is true.
Definitely. I feel like a lot of religious people kind of consider science almost like an enemy of their faith at a certain point, like in mm-hmm. particular Christians who, like, they start with their faith in the Bible and believe that the earth is only so many years old. And then that leads to them basically having to reject dinosaurs and say that, like, well, this never happened mm-hmm. because there's no way, like, if I take the Bible literally to be able to believe in this at the same time. Have you ever ran into that sort of conflict?
Not seeing Islam. They challenge us and they challenge the people to seek and study and learn, and everything that you find is going to bring you back to Allah and back to showing you that the Quran is real and Islam is real. And mm. we're having examples of that all the time, just like I just told you with the James Webb Telescope.
Interesting. Okay. Just to take it back to hip hop, when I went to my first ever rap battle a couple of years ago at a Drake's birthday party in Long Beach,
mm-hmm.
at the end of it, it was announced that Freeway and Cassidy were going to do another battle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it never happened. Where are you at on that?
I mean, it was supposed to happen. You know, shout out to URL, shout out to Smack, and shout out to Cassidy. We came together. You know, we was moving forward on making it happen, but it didn't happen.
Mm.
You know, so that's where I'm at with it right now. It didn't happen.
Was that your choice? Was it a money thing? Or was it?
I mean, I don't know exactly what went on. I talked to Smack about it one time, and he just was like, you know, thanks for being patient with me, but we really didn't have a conversation about moving forward yet. But that's my nigga, so, you know.
That's a shame. I feel like that's probably, like, one of the biggest battles that could possibly happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you, is that something that would excite you at this point? Is actually, like, taking time to really write about
this? I was excited about it at that time, at that moment. I was excited about that. But since then, you know, so much has happened since then, and, you know, I've been focused on putting this music out. Like I told you, we're about to drop the Stimulus Package 2, which is incredible.
Mm.
Just shot the first video with Jadakiss. We're getting ready to drop that probably in a couple weeks. I did a rock and roll project with Dame Dash. I've been, you know, I just been really locking in with the music. I could get excited about it again, but, you know, we would have to get me excited about it again.
Right. But are you the type of person who would take it so serious that you would take, you know, weeks or months to, like, really meditate on how you're going to rip this dude apart? That I know you don't have really much animosity towards him. You guys are cool, right?
We straight. Yeah, that's my bro. Like, yeah,
But to be a battle rapper.
We just was together probably a couple months ago.
To be a battle rapper, you got to really, like, channel your creativity to, like, how you're going to make this guy look inferior on stage, which is a pretty wild mental place to get into, right?
I would definitely have to focus on it and, you know, get it to where it need to be, you know. But it's definitely something still there because, you know, it was years and years of me having to hear that he murdered me, you know. So, you know, but as a battle rapper, you can get there when you're motivated to get there.
Mm. Do you disagree with the way that a lot of people ended up summarizing that radio battle back in the day? Do you think that you held your own more than people give you credit for?
I feel like that's the same night that we did the Hot 97 drum when we all went up Hot 97 with Funk Flex and killed it.
Right.
So when I got there, I really shot my load on Hot 97. You know, I wasn't expecting to have to battle somebody after that, which is no excuse because as a rapper, you're supposed to be prepared for every moment. So when I got there at the battle, I was trying not to spit anything that I spit on the radio. And, you know, it was a lot that went into that night. But I definitely, you know, feel like Cass got the victory that night.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about that moment, that is a situation that I feel like we'll probably never see again in rap. Because if you have an artist and you've invested six figures into developing their career, the idea of, like, taking them to the radio station and putting them head to head against another rapper who's in a similar situation being built up by a label and whatnot, you're taking such a gigantic risk.
Yeah, most definitely.
And nowadays, you just don't really see rappers.
Yeah, we'll never see that. Like, we see battle rap from people, like, that's what they do, that's their career, is they battle rap. But we'll never see how it was with me and Cass, like, two artists that's on the come up going head to head. Like, we'll never see that again.
Yeah, it's almost like the end of a certain energy in hip-hop where people just kind of realize that it's not worth the risk of having your artist potentially
because that really could have, if I wasn't such a strong artist and if my music didn't connect to people's hearts the way it do, that really could have damaged my career, you know, because people still talk about it to this day.
Right. You know? You had to really show and prove after that.
Yeah,
and, like,
for sure.
The fact that your album was so well-received and everything helped to kind of get you past that narrative, but it definitely was, like, a moment in time where...
Yeah, most definitely.
But I'm a person, too, where I'll take the takeover over Ether any day.
Yeah, I get... And, you know, I was telling you before how everything comes back to Islam. So my point on that is, like, throughout life and throughout my whole career, God never let me feel like I'm too much or I'm better than anybody else. Like, if it was ever a situation where I started feeling myself, God would do something to humble me. And I feel like that's a perfect example. And that things like that keep me balanced throughout life.
Right. You know? No, definitely.
That was a major night for me. Like, I murdered Hot 97 and everybody was talking about how Freeway killed Hot 97. And I was like, and then I got humbled after that. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's a perfect example of how, you know, you gotta, like, really be humble and you gotta really, like, really take a perfect, like, it's just a humbling moment. And, like, when you understand and you bring it back to religion, then you really understand what's going on out here.
It feels like all of the moments in my life in which my ego has gotten the most inflated, that there's always something waiting there to just smack me down and be like, nah, it's not going to be all smooth sailing from here.
Most definitely. And when you keep that in mind throughout and you're moving through our life, it'll make you a better person, you know?
Definitely. There's nothing good to come from getting to the point where you think that you're better than everybody.
Most definitely.
And as a rapper, that's kind of like right there in front of you as a temptation the whole time. Because as a rapper, there's so many people waiting to basically just line up to just basically take abuse from you, be treated any possible which way, do whatever you want them to do. But then at a certain point, as your career starts to slow down or you start to get a little bit of a reality check, a lot of times those people aren't there. And meanwhile, you hear people constantly talking about anyone who really comes off as like a sincere, genuine person. As soon as you start talking about them, like, you know, even somebody like you, I guarantee if I were to have a conversation with almost anyone who knows you, it's probably gonna be a conversation about Freeway, very down-to-earth, cool, humble dude. Mm-hmm. People really appreciate that, even though you are someone who, due to your status, you could kind of get away with being a dick to people. But in the long run, nobody really wants to be around that kind of energy.
Yeah, most definitely. And at the end of it, I'm pretty sure everybody in this room want to go to heaven at the end of the day. And it's better to be a good person. You know, that's going to get you there quicker than being an asshole and shitting on people all the time.
Mm, definitely.
And even the toughest gangster, I'm pretty sure they don't want to go to hell. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Definitely. One thing that I always appreciated about you two is that in the wake of the State Property Rockefeller fallout, some people took it as an opportunity. As the years went by, they got frustrated and they started to, you know, diss Jay or, mm-hmm. you know, speak in unkind ways about the opportunity that they were given and stuff. And I noticed that you never gave into that. You always remained thankful for the opportunity, even if maybe, you know, many years down the road, you weren't necessarily still in as much communication or whatever. Like, what made you never want to be disrespectful?
Man, Beans and Jay and Dame and Biggs changed my life. Like, you know, through them, I'm still getting money to this day, a lot of money. Like, you know what I'm saying? Alhamdulillah, through the grace of God. So I was never mad at nobody. You know, when the breakup happened, like I told you, I just did what I did to get there, and that's work hard, you know. And I feel like the relationship that Beans and Jay had was deeper than the relationship that me and Jay had. Like, me and Jay had a relationship, and we still do to this day. You know, that's the big homie. So he might have felt a deeper way than I did. Like, you know, but when it happened, you know, I was like, cool. We still cool. I'm going to try my best to get it out here, you know. And 2018, I got an opportunity to work with Jay again. I put out a project called Think Free through Roc Nation, you know, and which was a blessing because they told us Jay could never sign nobody back from the old Rock, and he signed me back, gave me another opportunity, which was a blessing. So I still got a lot of love and respect for him.
And how did that conversation about doing another project over there even come about?
Like I said, I kept a great relationship with Jay, and like I would send him music, and you know, we probably would have did it sooner, but I had a couple independent projects and obligations that I had to fulfill.
Mm.
And as soon as I fulfilled the obligations, I reached out to him like, look, big homie, I'm ready. And he was like, it's nothing. Let's get it done.
Mm.
And we got it done. At the time, I was still on dialysis. You know, I feel like Think Free was a great project, but, you know, I was still on dialysis at the time. And like, it was like a pivotal moment at Roc Nation. Like, they was like changing staff and everything. So I don't think the album got the attention that it needed because I couldn't push on my end because I was still doing dialysis 3 times a week. And
was that draining your energy levels?
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, being on dialysis is 3 times a week, 4 hours a day. Like, that's one of the reasons why I'm out here this weekend. I'm working with a company called One Legacy, which is an organ procurement company, you know. And I was here on New Year's, and I was a part of the Rose Parade, where mm-hmm. I rode on a float for being a kidney recipient. And my son, when he passed away, he saved 4 lives. You know, 2 people got his kidneys, 1 person got his liver, and 1 person got his lungs. So
Wow. He
was a hero even in passing, and they honored us. I rode on a float, and a picture of my son was behind me on a float riding through the streets, and it was like a surreal moment for me.
You know? Wow.
And I'm out here working with them, and we're doing a few programs to raise awareness about kidney health. This is kidney month.
Mm.
So this is the first day, March 1st is the first day of National Kidney Month, you know, so we're just trying to spread the awareness.
Wow.
So that's one of the main reasons why I'm out here.
No, that's amazing. When you look back at like how you even ended up in that situation where you needed another kidney, were you living in an unhealthy manner? Was it like the food and the drinks?
Most definitely. I'm living a life that most rappers live. Like, you know, always in the studio, 2-3 in the morning, eating whatever you want to eat, doing a bunch of shows, traveling the world, eating whatever you want to eat. After the club, you know, we got the club 2-3 in the morning, you ordering food, you might go to a diner, like, you know, you still up partying, like all those things took a toll on my body. And the crazy thing is, I remember like when we'd be on tour with Jay and Dame, Jay would be like eating like baked crab cakes and baked wings, and he'd be going to the gym in the morning. He's like, I'm telling y'all better take care of y'all. So, but we so young and we just accustomed to that lifestyle. Like, I'm from the hood where I had to grind and get everything, and it took a minute to get it, and I had to save it, and I had to stack it, and just go from that to making millions of dollars. Like, you just grind around, living life, doing whatever you want to do, and those things took a toll on my body.
Right.
You know, I had kidney failure from high blood pressure and diabetes, which are two of the risk factors for kidney failure. Being African American is another risk factor for kidney failure. So if you're African American, as soon as you're born, you have a risk factor for kidney failure.
Mm. Hey, I've seen a bunch of my friends deal with diabetes and having all kinds of heart issues and stuff. Yeah. Like, people who are pretty young, but who just like abuse alcohol to a crazy extent,
drugs,
especially
food, all that, like all those things can take a toll on your body.
Yeah, definitely.
And I never was like, I never did lean or pills or any of that. And I didn't, at one point I did drink a lot. Like, at one point I felt like I had to drink before I did a show, and that probably was for like a year straight.
Right.
But besides that, I never been like a real heavy drinking boy or a real heavy pill. I never really did like pills or lean. So it came from like just obsessive food, and just, I was a greedy boy, like eating two, three cheesesteaks and like stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, when it comes to the lean and stuff, when I talk to people who are real into that, like young dudes, I'm like, I want to sit you down and show you some interviews from Boosie, Beanie Siegel, and Ben Baller, like all these dudes throughout rap history who basically like dealt with some of the gnarliest health issues as a result of putting that shit in their body over and over and over. And I understand that to a lot of people, you know, if I was sitting here having this conversation with Paul Wall going to tell you it's part of the culture and you need to be moderate with it if you are going to fuck with it. But I mean, that's like the number one thing that young dudes just love it. They go for it, but it's so obvious. There's so many great examples of people who had their lives trashed by it.
I never really fuck with lean. I don't even want to say this, but the only time I drunk lean is when I made Rock the Mic.
Really?
Yeah, but besides that, I ain't never really get into it. I'm alhamdulillah, I didn't never get caught up in it.
There was just so much lean in the studio that you just went for it?
Yeah, I mean, it was there. Like, we was in Miami. Like, that's when they had like the real purple weed, like when you could see it and it's purple, and that was purple, the lean was purple. It was just a moment.
I mean, to be fair, like Beanie Siegel was talking about lean when nobody up in the East Coast was talking about it, I felt like. And
no, the lean was heavy in Philly.
Right.
Like, you know,
okay.
We had a whole J Street, like everybody would go all through the city, go down there to get lean. So it was something from like late 80s, early 90s that was in Philly, like, you know, so it's been around for a minute.
But when I'm listening to him too, when I'm listening to your old music over the past couple of days, there's a lot of like pills being referenced too that didn't really become super fashionable in hip hop until many years later. Like, I feel like he was somebody that was kind of ahead of the time, for better or for worse, on that.
Yeah, Beans from South Philly, so, you know, he was like always in the mix at a young age.
Okay. You could tell me or you can not tell me, but I got to ask. There's an epic story that Birdman ended up telling about a situation going down between Beanie and Gilly outside of a clothing store in Philly back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Were you around for the story?
I wasn't there. I heard about the story, but I wasn't there at that time.
Okay. And did you have any kind of relationship with Birdman?
Yeah, me and Birdman, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the big homie.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the story sounded kind of crazy. He's basically saying that Beanie punched out Gilly. Was Beanie really like that type of dude that, like, if somebody said anything disrespectful to him, he would just handle it?
Beans is crazy, yo. He got so many. Like, one day we was on South Beach, and, like, when you with Beans, just be prepared to fight, because he going to do something, and you got to help, because you there.
Really?
Like, we was on South Beach, and, like, it was this big husky bull, and he kept, like, walking behind us, and, like, he was, like, this was, like, when we was beefing with Jadakiss and them, and he kept blowing kisses at Mac, like, mwah. Mwah. Like, walking behind us, like, you know them niggas on South Beach be like big husky bull. He kept doing that, man. Mac turned around and clear bull. He had him face down, ass up. He was like face down before anybody could do anything. Like, and Mac got a bunch of instances like that. Like a bunch of that type of shit.
It just wasn't to be played with.
Yeah.
But is it kind of amazing for you to see Gilly becoming so successful doing the podcasting thing?
No, Gil, that's my brother. Like, I love Gil. Like, me and Gil got a great relationship, and I'm super happy for him, because he always been 100, you know, throughout everything, ups and downs, you know what I'm saying? So I really feel like him and Wallo deserve everything they got.
Yeah, it's pretty just unbelievable as somebody.
As far as that story, I wasn't there, you know. Every time I talk to Gil, Gil say he slipped it. I never heard Mac never told me that he connected on them, so I can't really, like, you know, can't really speak on if it connected or not.
Right.
But, like, I heard Gil say he slipped it a bunch of times. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
I don't even like to acknowledge this story because, to me, I'm not from Philly, but I'm proud of the fact that Gilly ended up getting it as a podcaster.
Yeah,
shit,
sure.
20 years after his arc as a rapper and everything.
Most definitely. Like, that's
just
blessing.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing, you know, because they in Philly, like, they waiting for you. They waiting to count you out, man. It's sad, man. You know, like, it's a lot of love in Philly, but at the same time, they waiting to count you out, you know. So to see my brother be able to take it to the level where him and Wallow took it at and still climbing is a blessing, man.
Did you guys ever have a conversation? Because he's going through a similar tragedy, losing his son last year.
Yeah, most definitely. I was there. It's so crazy because I was watching a movie premiere. And I live, like, outside the city. So I was watching a movie premiere, and right after the movie premiere, I got in a car and I could have got on the expressway to go home, or I could have rode through the city. I chose to ride through the city. So I'm riding down Broad Street and I get a call from Wallow, and he like, yo, they just killed Cheese. And I was like 5 minutes away from the hospital. Like, I pulled up, like, I know they was like, damn, how the fuck you get here this quick?
Mm.
Yeah, but you know, being as though I've been through what my brother had to go through, I definitely was there in his corner, you know, throughout the whole thing.
It's just like one of the worst scenarios in life to have a father have to deal with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, man. Like, it's something you would never think would happen to you in a million years. And I had to bury my children, both of them. I had to do it twice. Like, you know, it's something that really make you look at life and, you know, want to put life in perspective.
Could you see yourself having more kids, or did that kind of close the door on that part of your life?
Nah. I'm like, you know, I'm in a good space right now.
You're in a relationship?
I'm in a good space. Like, I'm in a good space right now. God is blessing me. You know, after you, like, in Islam, they say, with every difficulty comes ease, you know, and I've been through some difficult things, and I'm in a good space right now. Sometimes God will bless you and you won't even expect it, or you won't, like, you know, it might be a blessing going on the whole time and you don't even think it's a blessing, and then it turns out to be a blessing.
Definitely. How much time do you spend paying attention to what's going on in the Middle East with Israel and Palestine and all this?
I'm definitely tuned in. You know, I definitely, you know, pray a lot for my brothers and sisters over there, because, you know, what they're going through right now is it's beyond a tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know, like I told you, I buried two of my children.
Right.
And to see them every day being bombed and being killed and having to bury their children, it's a tragedy. But, you know, the one good thing about it is all those people are martyrs. You know, they're going straight to heaven, you know, so that's the one good thing out of it.
I've heard some people try to put it on rappers on both sides, really, to say, you should be more vocal about this, you should speak up about this. Does it seem like that's an important use of your platform in terms of your social media or whatever to speak out on that kind of stuff?
I mean, most definitely, you know, and I have spoken on it, you know, on my platform. I've been to several rallies, you know, but it's definitely important to be vocal about it. But the most important thing is to pray for them and offer sincere dua for them, you know, and if it's a person that you're seeing not being vocal about it, you can't really judge them because you don't know what they're doing. Like, they could be up all night praying for them and making dua for them. You know what I'm saying? So
it's also, like, one of the most incendiary topics to get involved in. So I can understand why people don't necessarily want to get involved, especially if maybe they're not super educated, because I've seen a lot of people jump into it and then immediately get slammed by the other side.
Yeah.
And then it immediately becomes obvious that maybe they didn't understand this topic as well as they thought that they did.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's very important to have an understanding too. Maybe some people not speaking on it because they don't have a full understanding of what's going on.
Right.
So.
And it's like now they expect everybody to be a politician. Like everybody has to be super educated about everything going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And I respect people who are kind of like, you know what, maybe this isn't necessarily my area of expertise and I can learn and maybe I'll be able to speak on it at some point, but it's not very flattering to be speaking out about something without necessarily being well-versed in it.
Yeah, and the best thing you can do for a person is sincere prayer. Like, really pray for them sincerely from your heart and ask God to help change their situation.
Mm.
That's the best thing you can do for them and for yourself.
Definitely. One era of Freeway's musical journey that I was a big fan of, too, is when you had the, I don't know if you noticed me saying it out there, but the Beards in the Building era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shout out to my bro, Jack Frost.
Jack Frost, yeah. Who I used to talk to on MySpace, like, every day for a period of time.
Frost's going to be hype. He's going to be heavy.
I used to be hitting him up all the time, and I loved the energy that you guys had going at that time. What brought you guys together during that, like, 2006, I'm guessing, era?
I knew Frost since he was Big Tab. Like, you know, like I told you, I'm from the era where I was trying to be a rapper since I was little in Philly, and Frost was around. Like, you know, when he had a deal before a lot of people had a deal.
Mm.
Like, he had a song with the Youngs. He was, like, on the Youngsters, which is another big group from Philly back in the day. He was, like, on one of their remixes or something. And, like, you know, he had a lot of notoriety in the city for that.
Mm.
And when I was trying to get on, he embraced me and was, like, having me in the studio and stuff. Like a big brother, kind of, like, you know.
Definitely. And there was a lot of, like, Beards in the Building merch going around at that time,
sure.
And stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the epic era.
Frost crazy with them Beards in the Building shirts.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that was the move for a while there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned that you did a whole rock project with Dame. How did that end up coming together, and what's your relationship with him these days?
Hey, me and Dame good. Shout out to OSG, which is All School Grounds. It consists of 200 to 300 principals and educators that look like me, you know, and they brought us together. They do a call every Thursday where they try to come up with better ways to educate the children. You know, they like the cool principals and like showing children that you don't just have to be like a basketball player or a rap star to get money. You can actually be an educator or have education and get money, mm-hmm. You know, and Dane was already fucking with them. I got introduced to them. They had a conference, which they're having again this year. I think it's the 22nd and 23rd of March at Columbia University. But we did it last year, and they had me and Dame together, and they awarded me with an OSG jacket, and I performed, rocked the mic, and Dame was up there, and he started dancing, doing the dance. So it was like old times, and we connected through that. And, you know, Dame was always asking me to come fuck with him and make some music, so he got America New Studios, and he got his own network, America New Network.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there, and we did the project in like 5 days.
Right.
You know.
And was it a challenge at all for you to get on those types of beats, or were you just rocking with a live band?
Yeah. They would start playing, and I would come up with the concept. Dame would come up with something. We put it together. We recorded everything. So while we was coming up with it, we was recording, and then I would go back and probably put a verse here, a verse there, and then we had the whole project done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You prefer that, or would you prefer to just like get on beats from producers that you already have relationships with?
I'm cool either way. It depends on like what mood I'm in. Like they're both like, you know, of course, just getting beats from producers is what I do best. That's what I do. But that's actually fun. Like doing the way me and Dame did it, Pause. It was fun.
Definitely. No laughing over there. No laughing at the pause. But I feel like there's very few people who've been able to like stay on good terms with Jay and Dame. It's like kind of rare to be able to do that tightrope walk.
Yeah, I hope I'm still cool with everybody. It's like, no. Yeah, but you know, I'm me, and like, you know, everybody know, like, I don't got no malice and no bad intentions for nobody. Like, you know, Jay and Dame both did a lot for me at the same time, so I'm not really picking sides. They both my brothers.
Do you think they'll ever end up patching it up?
I don't know. Like, I did at one point, but I don't know. Like, I hope so. Like,
yeah. You know. But now that's like they're even more apart from each other in terms of where they're at in their lives. I don't know.
I definitely feel like it would be big for hip hop and everything. But, you know, I don't really know what's in their hearts. You know, I don't know the whole story or what might have took place that I don't know. So you know, I would just wish and hope they could come together. But I'm still straight with everybody. I still got love for everybody.
Definitely. What was your relationship like with Kanye back in the day?
Kanye, that's my bro, man. Me and Ye, you see, I was on his first album.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, one of the only, I think I was the only artist from The Rock that was on his first album, man. He was on my first album. He would, like, bring me to, like, Super Bowl parties and stuff and let me perform with him. I did the Dave Chappelle shit with him. Like, Ye, man, Ye straight.
Definitely. Have you stayed in communication at all over the years?
No, I don't really talk to him. I seen him a couple times. Every time I seen him, it was all love, but I'm not in, like, constant communication with him.
Definitely. Do you see the sort of, like, spiritual journey that he's on out in public? Like, how do you feel about that taking place?
Man, I just wish him the best, man. You know, I know every time I dealt with him, he was a sincere, good dude, like, you know, with a good heart. So, you know, I just wish him the best, man. You know, I know he's been through a lot. You know, just losing your mom in general. Like, you know, I lost my dad from dementia in 2022. Really affected me a lot. Like, you know, and, you know, just because you got a bunch of money don't mean that you don't have challenges like everybody else, you know. So I just pray for him and wish him the best.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. Losing your father to dementia, like, that must have been rough. Like, was there a dark period towards the end in terms of just him not being who he was prior?
Yeah, it was rough, man. And, like, we all live together. Like, you know, my daughter, my son, and my dad live with me. It's me, my dad, my daughter, my son, and my little cousin was there helping with my dad. So it was rough. Like, you know, at one point, my dad didn't even remember me. I'd be in a room with him, and he would ask me for me. And it was rough for me, but it was rough for me thinking how he's feeling, because that got to be lonely. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you asking the one person that you know is here for you and loving you unconditionally, you asking for them and they right there with you. So, like, I would think about that a lot. Like, I know he's probably, like, in a lonely space. And then he would be, like I'd be helping him get dressed, and he'd be like, man, I'm all fucked up. And, like, man, I hate being like this. And, like, here and there he would say, like, little stuff like that, and that shit really would, like, hurt me. Like, I just would tell him, like, I'm here with you and I love you and you did a great job. You know what I'm saying? So
it's just got to be so brutal because, you know, you're a kid and this is the person who's doing everything for you.
Yeah. Like, my dad, at one point to me, he was like the strong, like, He-Man, Superman, like the strongest person in the world to me.
He's everything that you base your manhood and what you want to be on.
Yeah.
And then to see him get to that point, it's got to be a tough way to go out.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you know, and then it, once again, you know, it brings you back to God. Like, you know, in Islam, we bury our people different than, you know, a traditional Christian burial. Our funerals are called a janazah. So we wash the body, we wrap the body, and then we take the body to the masjid. Everybody prays over the body. Then we take the body to the cemetery, and we actually take the body out of the coffin and place the body in the grave to the east. So I had to get in my dad's grave with one other person and place him in the grave. You know, and just the, when you washing and you wrapping somebody that took care of you and somebody that you care for, it's a so real moment. And when you look at them and you realize eventually one day that's going to be you.
Right.
So it's like, that's another reason why I feel like Islam is perfect. Because those, even like my mom, she's Christian and I've been trying to get her to take Shahada and be Muslim forever. But after, like, our first janazah, when I buried my son, she was like, I never seen nothing like that before. Like, it's beautiful. Like, the way that y'all take care of y'all loved ones. And things like that is bringing her closer, you know?
I feel like the funeral is such an important way to, like, close that chapter in your life. And was that the feeling that you had? Like, this is as painful as this might be to have to be handling my dad while he's gone like this, did it put a proper, you know, bookmark on the relationship?
I felt like I did my job as a Muslim and as a son, like being able to take care of him and then being able to bury him and pray over him and send him off proper. I felt like I did my job, but it's crazy at the same time because we got the same name. So when I'm walking away from the grave, I see my name on the grave, you know.
Damn.
Which is another reminder, like, that's going to be me.
Yeah, I mean, you're a strong dude, man. I mean, you've been through more in your life than the vast majority of people. And I mean, I feel like that message, it's like, does it feel like that's your reason for continuing to go, to keep doing this? It's just the fact that you've survived through so much of this shit?
I mean, one of the reasons, you know, definitely. You know, in 2015, artist that I work with from the West Coast, Jacker, passed away. And like that, like when he passed away, it really affected me more than like I had homies in my hood that I grew up with that got killed and passed away, and it didn't affect me like it affected me when he passed away. And it was just because of the type of person he was in his heart and the way we connected. Like when I met him, it was like looking at myself. Like he was doing the same thing I was doing on the East Coast, but on the West Coast.
Yeah.
We wound up doing a bunch of projects together, touring the world together. We went to Africa, Sweden, like a bunch of places together. You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, your relationship with Jacka, it's like you just showed an incredible ability to adapt and to be able to fit yourself into a whole lot of different musical scenes and different eras in music. And there's probably so many people on the West Coast that would have never really tapped in with your music in any depth. But as a result of your working with him, all of a sudden, it's like that's a shitload of different people that got exposed to you. And that, yeah, to me, is like,
let me tell you about that's, this. That's amazing. Jacker, that's my nigga. That's my brother. I pray for him to this day. Like, I would land in the Bay, and before I go to the hotel, I had like 30,000. He'd ride me around doing a bunch of features, and he'd be like, all right, now we can have fun. Like, you know, and like, meeting people like that sincere is rare. Mm. Like, you know, people that'll put you before their self is rare. Like, you know, even before we really locked in, I had did this, somebody had gave me a bunch of money to do like an independent project, and they wound up calling it Philadelphia Freeway 2, and I did it in the Bay Area, but I think I was like in Sacramento, and Jack rode up there just to make sure I was straight and was just fucking with me, like just showing regular, genuine love, like shit that you don't get in this music business.
Mm. Oh, okay. So that's the project that when you go to Apple Music is listed as like your most recent album, the Philadelphia Freeway 2 Special Edition?
Yeah, I think they might have re-released it or something, yeah.
Okay. Is there, like, are you in album mode right now? Like, are you planning on putting out another full-length project?
Bro, I just told you like three times that I just finished the stimulus package too.
Sorry. Right, you did something
with Jake One. We just shot the first video. It's called Ringing with Jadakiss. I'm gonna show it to you before I leave. But like the stimulus package too is incredible. Mm. Like it's like, you know, everything I've been through, I poured it into that album. It's incredible. But I got like four projects loaded. We starting with that, and we're gonna keep it rolling.
Right, 100%.
Shout out to Jake One.
Shout out to Jake One. What do you feel like he brought to the table that made you want to do so many projects with him? It's just a personal relationship, or is there something about his beats?
No, it's besides, we have a great personal relationship. That's my brother. And, like, you know, he really pushed me to do this stimulus package, too. And he just was like, man, I just want to see you happy, man. Like, you done been through so much. I just want, like, and that was his main motivation. And just to have somebody like that in my corner means a lot to me. But as far as the music, it's just a perfect chemistry. Mm. Like, Jake can send me a pack, and I run through the whole pack every time. Like, you know, it's like, this is just like a perfect marriage, man. And, you know, I got people that's around me, like, don't do nothing with nobody else but Jake. Mm. You know, but we just got a great chemistry.
Is there any level of concern you have when you look at the younger generation of rappers coming out of Philly? Because a lot of the dudes who are getting traction in terms of, like, the younger drill artists and stuff like that, the content is it's very violent in comparison to, I mean, obviously you guys were street rappers back in the day, but your shit was more about hustling, and nowadays it feels like so much of the music is based on like personal animosity between people.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, you know, I don't condone none of that, and I think it's, especially in Philly, like, it's so sad because a lot of them artists that was dope either got killed or they're in prison.
Yeah.
Like, you know, shout out to Tor. He's still around doing his thing. Shout out to OT7 Kwani. He really making a huge impact.
Kwani is dope. Shout out to him.
Out of the city, you know. And, you know, but a lot of them fell to the wayside, man. You know, and it don't really make that much sense to me to go shoot somebody and rap about it.
Mm.
Like, the way these cops are and the way these detectives are, like, they're going to be right on your ass. Like, it don't really make that much sense to me. Like, I'm not really trying to do... show off that much to the public. Mm. You know, I'm from the era where if you do something to somebody, you don't want nobody to know about it. Like,
right. That's one thing I always think about when I go back to sort of golden age, like 90s, 2000s era rap. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm sure people had all kinds of problems with each other, but nobody really was mentioning each other unless it was another rapper, which is probably something we need to go back to.
I just think, like, you know, I also don't know what they're going through, you know, with each other and what's the level of how things have been, you know, escalated. But I really think, like, a lot of that nonsense needs to come to a halt, because the end results is either you in jail or you dead. You're not even able to make money to take care of your family from jail. And if you did, that's a whole nother thing that you got to go through. You
right. know, so. Definitely. Well, they're rushing me along here. I know you got a bunch more obligations throughout the day, but thank you so much for the interview. And honestly, it's like, it's just amazing to see how strong you are in the face of so much adversity.
I appreciate you, man. Like, I didn't even know that you was a fan. Like, you know, I watch you. Of course, you popular, you know, and I keep up with everything that you got going on. So to hear that you're a fan means a lot to me, man.
No, appreciate for sure. It. Since high school, since 99, right? Like, that's I don't even know when I first started listening to y'all, but for sure, it's some of my favorite stuff throughout
thank
life.
You, man.
But I got one messy-ass question that I got to ask before we go.
Go ahead, shoot.
Did Jay really have to kill somebody because you did a crime with him and your beard was sticking out? You got to kill a witness.
That's funny.
I'm guessing, though. Or at least we're going to keep the street code in effect. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, we definitely ain't going to do a song. if Jay did that he started it.
Mm.
He started it. It's his fault. All the drill rappers killing each other because he killed somebody.
Perhaps.
Because my beard was sticking out.
You got to tuck that beard back in. All right, thank you so much, man. For real. It was an
honor.
Appreciate
you, man. Yeah,
Freeway,
you.
Go turn my man up on all platforms. Appreciate you, G. No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, TikTok, Patreon, Instagram. Like, comment, subscribe, nojumper.com if you want to support. Let's go.